Hi, my name is Cynthia Fernandez, and I'm here with Nancy Mellon, author of many books, including Body Eloquence. We were just having a conversation earlier about a very interesting topic that we wanted to share with you all, the digital dilemma. So, Nancy, you know, we're in a digital age where we're touching everything. I have a smartphone with a touch screen. A lot of places that you do shopping have, you know, self-serve checkouts where you touch the screen. And our children, even in school, are using computers and learning how to type at a very, very early age, not the least of which are these video games and computer games that they have. And I just want to know, out of curiosity, what is the story? What is the story evolving into around our hands, and how does that play a part with the rest of our body?
Oh, my. Well, we have a picture of the whole body in our hands, just as we have that in our ears and in our feet, and every part of us is a kind of secret mirror for every other part of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so the human hands are no exception. They've been evolving for all of these years. And in the beginning, it was a great feat that human beings could take hold of tools and begin to work with tools. Now here we are with never so many human beings in touch with so many human beings.
It's true.
That we can, even the little ones can reach out and be digitally in touch with different languages and individuals. They can, they can find images of parents and grandparents and long lost ancestors on the family computer if somebody's helped them. Some with that. The whole sense of touch is right in the process of evolving in astonishing ways right now. And where there is evolution, there are often also losses. My ancestors were weavers, and I remember my mother would often, she would sharpen her fingernails. And I began to notice that, and I wondered, what was that? And she didn't know why she sharpened her fingernails. And my theory was that some of our weaving ancestors would sharpen their nails in order to be able to count the threads.
Ah.
But for a long time, I used to think, it was her grandmother who was a homeopathic physician, and mm-hmm. maybe she was counting little pills or something.
Uh-huh.
But that didn't really make sense. So now I'm holding this positive theory that my mother isn't a witch, but that instead she and my aunt were carrying this ancestral habit in their hands. Now, we all have gifts that with our hands that we discover as we grow. And those are all stories.
Uh-huh.
And you, I'm sure, have wonderful tales to tell about discovering the ways that you connect with others through your hands.
Well, you know, I trained in massage many years ago, and obviously use of hands in massage communicate a lot of information. It also receives a lot of information. That's one of the things that I love about doing massage. And one of the modalities that we learned that used mostly energy to connect our hands as a practitioner to the entire body and the elements within the body through our fingers.
Indeed. And the fingers are, they are entry points for an immense journey that the energy takes all the way through the entire body and, of course, also into the brain. And so every finger is a kind of antenna that is in touch with the whole cosmos. As children, you know, as adults, we forget that we can reach out and touch a star, you know, at night before we can reach for the moon. And there's a sense that we are made of these celestial powers and potencies up there that are part of us, and we are part of them still, even though we were earthly beings. And so we can reach out and also touch such a huge array of natural realities, the leaves of the tree, the bark of the tree, the feel of the grass, and all the different kinds of fur that a lucky child gets in touch with before they're 12 years old.
Well, you know, Nancy, isn't it part of a developmental necessity that children have a multitude of textures and shapes and temperatures, that their brain actually is developed with that diversity?
The brain, and of course the brain is really kind of outpost for the whole person who is evolving. And so that's one way to look at the brain, and that it is constantly responding to our whole sense world of experiences, which the brain then helps us to build into patterns and to make sense of in some ways. And so everything that we come in touch with is potentially giving us a sense of life. Now, this new story that we're in as human beings, when we reach out and we can touch, say, a puppy or a cartoon of a puppy on an iPad screen when we're 2 years old or 3 years old and so forth, and the little puppy will gambol about on the screen, on the flat screen, that's a very different kind of experience from actually playing with a puppy.
Very different.
And so what is happening in our brain development now when children have a great many of these experiences where they see an image and then they touch the image with their finger, and then, or with their fingers or their thumb perhaps, there is this electronic flatness that they have to translate into some sense of life for themselves. And it can be quite hard work and exhausting for them, and at the same time it can be a bit addictive because they're trying to figure out how to make life out of these kinds of pictures.
Yeah, they're exploring.
They're exploring, yes. And so, now, and of course, there have never been so many books, which also have flat pages for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And the color resolution is not the way color resolves in the real natural world. So the eye adjusts to that as well. So children are really in an evolutionary, we all are in a huge evolutionary experience. Now we're right in the midst of the hard part of the story in some ways, where we've gotten into an enchantment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fascinating enchantment, and the wizards are all around us. The wizard and wizardesses are all around us, and they're holding us in this ever more fascinating palace of mirrors and so forth. And many, many children, as we read about more and more, are unable really to get out of that hall of mirrors and to explore an alternative reality, which is the old-fashioned reality that everybody used to be in touch with.
So that would include for sure the natural world.
That would definitely include the natural world.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of puzzlement about that, both in the souls of children, I think, who still have very strong ancestral imprints from these other centuries, other ancestral experiences with very direct connection with the natural world and with this other relationship with very intense reality that comes through the screen.
Mm-hmm. I have experience with young people. One in particular comes to mind. Since she started school at age 5 and computers were in the classroom, definitely children were encouraged to use computers as a way of learning, mm-hmm. as a teaching tool. I've known this young lady for a number of years since then and spend time with her. What I notice is that there could very well be an immediate gratification element in computer work, whether it's a learning tool or an entertainment opportunity for kids, because when we are in a situation where there's something to build or something to make in the kitchen or just personally something to earn, I notice that she gives up rather quickly. And seeing how much time she uses a computer and the different programs that she works with, I wonder, and I'd love to have your input on this, how does it impact the brain perception ability when you're working with a program that has immediate feedback and everything is colored and everything is there instantaneously, and then you turn around and you're in the natural world, in a real physical environment where you don't feel as competent or as accomplished. Certainly young people need to develop that, but perhaps disempowering for them to have lack of involvement with the natural world where consequences are inherent.
I believe that there is a deep and eternal part of the human soul which is in touch with the way that story has continuously built and cared for the human soul. And so that if in that story comes through the spoken word, which is loving, which comes from the heart, and it, no matter how difficult then the story may be, as in so many of the old great old tales, terrible things happen.
True.
And very difficult, impossible enchantments take over the young soul that's trying to achieve more love and more well-being for their whole realm. These enchantments are always broken because help is asked for. And even sometimes in the great tales, when help isn't asked for,
that's true,
it will come as it does to our lucky children, to us lucky human beings, that we are mysteriously helped, sometimes even when we've lost the ability to call for help. So I think the great old tales are teachers in that sense, that there is a deep old plot line which is built right into human breathing, right into the heartbeat of all of us human beings, which is saying, just attend to the rhythmic secrets of the creative world. And if we do, then it's quite possible we will come through.
Mm-hmm.
And we may come through in a most astonishing, surprising way. So now, as I see young people who are really captive, and if not addicted, deeply into the computer world and trying to figure it all out and doing a great job of it, many of them, they're in a part of the story.
They're in a part of the story.
They are in an episode, a difficult and very challenging episode, which they've got to deal with because all of their compeers are dealing with it. They're all on a vast scale. Human beings are trying to learn how to deal with this. But meanwhile, their hands are rather puzzled because human hands, all of these centuries, long, long centuries, have been involved with tasks that truly warm the hands. You know, whether it's weaving or farming or milking or, you know, planting or building
woodwork.
Or woodwork or whatever it may be, sewing, that there's a great steady warmth that pours right through the whole person. And others who are doing that work are experiencing that in a similar way. So there's a kind of communal warmth that is in the hands, and the work may be very difficult, but it is still building the whole body, because the whole body, every finger and the thumb in old Chinese medicine, you know, the heart is the baby finger, but the intestinal tract, the small intestinal tract, energy pattern comes right, also begins right in the baby finger.
Mm-hmm.
And then the ring fingers are finger of protection, the protection of our relationships. The wedding band is worn on the third finger for very good reasons.
So
the whole immune system.
Immune system, yeah.
The whole immune system is keyed into that,
yeah,
that finger. And the middle finger is involved with the heart, the protection of the heart.
Pericardium.
The pericardium. Mm-hmm. And pointer finger is in the old Chinese picturing of the energy patterns in the body, that is the large intestine, which has a very important part, very connected with our brain activity and our ability to really do things well, no matter how long it takes to do them, how much patience we need to weave or work through that whole task, that pointer finger is very involved with our sense of, now, finally, that's perfect. It's done.
Mm-hmm.
And the thumb works with all of the fingers and is connected with our breathing.
The thumb, so that would be lungs?
Yes, lungs. In fact, you can feel the lungs, a kind of picture of the lungs right at the base of the thumb.
It's shaped similarly, yeah.
Yes, right. And so we massage the thumbs. We can actually feel how that strengthens our breathing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, if we're on the computer, the thumbs are rather neglected for the most part. They don't do too much. Sometimes they whack on the space bar, but well, that's important too. But they tend to kind of hang out there waiting for their moment. Whereas the thumbs used to be in most human activities absolutely crucial.
Well, that's the opposing digit.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then that's pause for thought. What is happening to our breathing?
Yeah.
What is happening to the way that warmth used to stream through the fingers, out through the fingers, in a great warmth exchange with the bread and the fabric and the wood and the creatures that were being cared for. Now that great exchange with the natural world is in a different story. And we don't know. We're right in the thick of this enchantment right now.
So we don't know how the story's going to end?
But I do. We don't know how it's going to end. Maybe someone, I haven't met anyone who yet can tell me.
But it's possible we're at a pivotal point in the story.
There are more and more young people who are looking out of the natural world and saying, I think maybe we better get out there and tend that, because otherwise, what we have is virtual reality, and that's going to be a different story.
Well, not only that, but virtual reality is completely dependent on electricity.
Mm.
And as we all know, electricity gets interrupted on occasion.
It does. And you can't eat it, exactly.
No, although, you can't eat it.
As far as, we haven't worked that one out yet, how we can live on electricity. So, and then that would be a different kind of human being.
Well, Nancy, you're right. You know, there's more people being homeschooled, learning gardening, and understanding what sustainable agriculture or permaculture is now than when I was a kid.
Mm.
You know, when I was a kid in the 50s and 60s, the dream was the industrial age. It was technology.
And that dream is vastly realized now. And it's right now like wildfire as we speak. More and more high-rises all over the world. And families, children being raised up on the 40th floor and so forth, and go down a few floors for their little play dates and go back up again. And where the people who built all of these high-rises actually were rather tired of nature and the work of tending the natural world, and very, very excited about creating an alternative reality. So we're right in the thick of this, millions and millions of human souls, and the young generation coming up, the young generations coming up now, the very little ones, and then, you know, the 18, 20, 25-year-old group, they are right in the thick of this, making their decisions, looking for their help, calling out, what shall I do with this? This is so exciting, all this way that I can be in touch with the screens. But how does that actually make me feel? And is that the way I want to feel?
Mm.
And so when they pause to ask that question, many of them are feeling they need balance. They need to find balance. Balance can come, as I've believed for many years, because I've gotten involved with storytelling as a healing art, just about the same time that the computers began to reproduce at such an enormous rate. Yes, and so there, one of the ways that we can rebalance ourselves is through restoring the storytelling part of ourselves, which we've spoken about in other podcasts, which can really invite the different aspects of the human being to speak, to resonate, so we can hear ourselves as human beings. We can tune into the fullness of our humanity. And if we can't speak these greater stories of human possibility and hopefulness, then we're in some kind of electronic duck soup together, which we can swim around in for a long time. And eventually, I do believe, because I am essentially an optimist, that we will be finding our way to balance this.
Well, Nancy, it's so fascinating to talk with you and listen to your perspective on how all the aspects of the body are connected to all the other aspects of the body and the universe. If you'd like to have more information on Nancy Mellon or the work that she's doing or online courses that will be available in the future, check her website, healingstory.com. I have other interviews that you're welcome to check out as well. Simple Life Radio is my radio show, and podcasts are available. If you search Simple Life Radio one word, then you will find. All right. Well, that's it for today. We hope to be with you again in the future. Bye for now.